when we look at our culture, sometimes I think I get the impression that people think that the poor have not existed, you know, throughout time. But when we look at poverty, we find that it is a problem that's been around for a long, long time. Remember what Jesus said? The who you'll always have with you. The poor. So in his day and time, there was poverty. And as we look at the 2,000 or so years since then, even prior to the Lord's time, we find the problem of poverty. So when we look at the Old Testament, as we go back and look at passages which relate to the law of Moses, one of the things that we find will be passages that deal with poor folks. As we look on page 46, beginning with points 3, 4, and 5, let's get some helpers lined up. Leviticus 19, verses 9 and 10. This will take some information from the Old Testament law. You have a minute to get there. Who'd like to be our volunteer? All right, Brian, Leviticus 19, verses 9 and 10. After that, we'll look at Psalm 82, verses 3 and 4. Psalm 82, Lewis 3 and 4. And then our third passage is going to come also from the Old Testament, Proverbs 31, verse 9. Proverbs 31, verse 9. All right, Tina, thank you. All right, Brian, if you're ready, Leviticus 19, verses 9 and 10.
And when you reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not wholly reap the corners of thy field, neither shalt thou gather the gleanings of thy harvest. And thou shalt not glean the vineyard, neither shall you gather every grape of the vineyard. Thou shalt leave them for the foreign stranger, I am the Lord.
All right. At the end of the reading that was done, God made it clear why he gave these instructions. He said it's for the poor. It's for the people who are suffering, the people that do not have all that they might have. Three basic points here. The first two are relatively easy to pick up. The third one may be a little more difficult. What was the first point? God says as you go out and you glean your field, you get everything you can get? No? Where do you leave some things? All right, in the corners, around the edges. And today we typically find land, it's picked clean, but in this particular case, God said you leave some of that for the poor. What else? What's the second item there? Okay, right. You've got some information about the gleaners, you picked up the third one. If, you know, today somebody's out picking up apples, and, you know, that may not be the best one to put in the basket if it drops, but we drop things sometimes, and we say, well, okay, that's fruit, that's something that's productive, you know, let's go pick it up and put it in the back of the basket. But once again, if it was dropped, that was something else that was left for the poor. All right, Psalm 82, verses 3 and 4. If you were to sum up what Lois read, what would you say God's view was when it came to the poor? Figure out how to take their house. Figure out how to let them starve to death. What did he say? All right, do justice. Defend them. Uphold them. Protect them. Provide a safety net, if you will. Do what's right by them. Well, why were the poor abused in ancient times? It's the same reason that the poor are abused today. People can get away with it, typically, can't they? I mean, in our society, we have various tools that people can sometimes employ, sometimes some free services that they can go and complain to. But in that day and time, if you weren't the rich, if you weren't the powerful, what happened if you were among the lowly and poor and you were abused? You just suffered. You just lost your house, lost your land, lost your crop. So God was mindful of this. This was one of the things that the Old Testament prophets paid a great deal of attention to. People were not just, and God's preachers came along and said, the fatherless, the orphans, the widows, the poor, they need to be treated and treated well. Anything you want to address before we pick up with our next passage, Stan?
Well, it's kind of interesting that they use the term there, that when it comes to the poor, to use justice with them. The poor were also considered at that point in time and something that went through until the Jewish nation wasn't anymore. And that was basically that a person who was poor because he was a sinner. And so that obviously was not always true. And they should not be treated as if they were.
Yeah, people have had contempt for the poor for various reasons. Sometimes you find poverty in conjunction with bad health, and people look at a person and say, or they're not bathed well, and a person will look at that individual or maybe the family or a particular group of people and say, well, this or that. You know, God wasn't interested in helping you, or you're a sinner, or whatever. And God's people are supposed to be different. In addition to the passages that we've looked at thus far, what we have in Proverbs 31, verse 9, is going to bring us to a slightly different perspective about the poor. You know, it's one thing to not mistreat somebody. It's another thing to do what for them? Yeah, it's another thing to go to bat for. So when we look at how the poor were treated in the Old Testament, God deals with this from two perspectives. First of all, he says, you know, make sure that you don't abuse them. Leave some things out there in the field. And then he says this, Proverbs 31, 9.
Open your mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and needy.
All right, a lot of people open their mouths, not always for good causes. But in this particular case, God said, you open your mouth. Why? You plead for the poor. Well, generally, when people plead for someone, what do we expect in our country? Who are they pleading for? Yeah, it's usually a selfish plea. Hey, you know, I need this. You know, Teresa was telling me about somebody on the way in. They had to go pick up their dog at the kennel, and they couldn't make it by 6, and they called and pleaded. Hey, just stay open 10 more minutes. We can't be there at 6. We can be there by 6:10. Please, please, please stay open for us. But we do find in the Bible and sometimes in life people pleading for others. When it comes to the people who are downtrodden, what about somebody who needs a job? Maybe you're not well connected. Would it be appropriate to plead for them?
Would it help if you got someone that will speak for
you? Sure, that's certainly beneficial. What about other situations in life where we might plead for the poor? Plead for somebody who's down and out. Brian, I saw you first.
I think of the pro bono work that's done by lawyers, you know, pleading the case of someone who can't afford it.
Okay. You have an indigent defendant unable to pay for his or her defense, and you have what we would expect to be a reasonably good lawyer that will come forward and plead for that particular person. So that would be one of the commendable things that we find in our society. Okay, I'll come back to you, Virginia. I think it was Scott that was... All right. We see children in this country and really throughout the world that don't have anyone. You know, maybe the parents died of AIDS, or maybe they've been abandoned. There are children sometimes that need someone to step in, an abused child. You know, there may be physical, there may be verbal abuse, and someone needs to step in and plead on that child's behalf. So that certainly would be appropriate.
Well, we've had a few presidents that were rich, and they have started programs.
Mm-hmm. Sure. You look, and you know, for two opposites there, you've got Bush Sr. and you've got Bill Clinton. They got together and worked for, was it Haiti? I don't remember the country. I think it was Haiti. That's what comes to mind. So once again, let's create a foundation and let's go and plead for these folks. So if the money's being used in a good way, and in that particular case, I think it was. So sure, that kind of thing. So very, very good. All right, any other items you want to discuss before we start picking up with points 6, 7, and 8? All right, point 6, we have a reference to Galatians 2:10. Who'd like to be your helper? You'll once again have a minute to get there. Galatians 2, verse 10. Scott? And after that, we'll look at Acts 11:29. All right. Tim, thank you. And then we'll look at Mark 12:37. Glenda? And then after that, we'll look at Matthew 11, verse 5. Matthew 11, verse 5. Amy, how about you? Matthew 11, 5. All right, going back to point 6, it says, the church of our Lord surely has an obligation to respect the rights of its poor by supplying sustenance. That is what people lack. What request did James, Peter, and John make of Paul and his helpers in Galatians 2:10?
Only they asked us to remember the poor, the very thing I was eager to do.
All right, two things. Remember who? Remember the poor. And what did Paul say? I'm not interested in that. We're eager to do that. That's one of the things that Christians should be interested in doing. And we do a little of that here. With some of our ladies, they've done well, especially lately in trying to reach out to some people who are struggling in various ways. Sometimes, you know, food. Sometimes it's help with clothing. Really good work. All right, then B, when Agabus prophesied that a dearth was on its way, what action was taken by the brethren to see that the poor saints in Judea would not be neglected, as we see from Acts 11, verse 29?
Then the disciples, every man according to his ability, determined to send relief unto the brethren which dwelt in Judea.
Okay, can we help everybody? No? And can we meet all the needs that just one family has? No, maybe in some circumstances, but there are going to be some other cases where we say we can only do part of what you need. We can't fulfill everything that you need. So Acts 11:29 is an encouraging passage. How much did they help? They helped according to their ability. Remember that poor widow? Jesus said she's... Oh, no, wait, I'm sorry, different story. But she's done what she... What's that magical word? She's done what she could. And that is the obligation that we have. We do what we can as we go through life. As I was thinking about this, I came across some information about a missionary surgeon. This fellow was trying to go into a place, a remote area, and you know, people didn't have any money to pay him, and he wasn't really expecting that. So went into one house and did a little surgery, and the woman was very, very grateful. But for her family, they didn't have much food except for a rabbit, and two chickens. So she invited him back, and he said, well, that's not necessary. He thought that she was going to try to do something, and she said, yes, please, come back. So he did come back at a later time, and by the time he got back, she had taken that rabbit, combed the rabbit, and sold that combed hair for a little bit of money. And then with the chickens, you know, she went ahead and fed her and her husband with the eggs from the chickens, and then she roasted that rabbit, and she cooked up the two chickens, and gave that food to the missionary. Now, when you think about a person, that's all that they have, a rabbit and two chickens, you know, use the eggs and use the hair. So when you find people who are stretched a lot of times, you find some of the best givers, people who are really, really helpful. We see that today. When you look at surveys that talk about, you know, who gives. And once again, there are exceptions to this, and I understand that and don't want to leave the wrong impression. But on both ends of the scale, typically, where do you find your better givers? At the people who have a lot or at the people who don't have very much? Yeah, the people who are poor are generally going to be the better givers. Now, there are exceptions. Sometimes you find some wealthy people who are just, you know, great as far as philanthropy. They are very, very good at giving. Sometimes you find some poor people who are skinflints. You know, they wouldn't give a penny, even if they, you know, found two of them. But still... You have that kind of spirit, and that's a good lesson for us. All right, before we pick up with point seven, anything that you'd like to add or ask? Here we have a couple of passages. Mark 12:37 is first. I think that's you. Okay. The common people heard him gladly. Well, when we think about the common people, who would you say was in that group? I would say at least some of the poor were probably in that group. So when we think about Jesus, the people he dealt with, there were some people who, average, maybe not what we would think of as middle class, but they were very, very glad when they had the chance to hear Jesus. Then Matthew 11, verse 5. Thank you. What will we put in the blank? The who? The poor have the gospel preached to them. When you think about the people that Amy just read about there, you have people like the deaf. Would you associate the deaf typically as people with people who usually have money or not? No, we would think, you know, it's probably going to be a little limited as far as the job market and some of the other difficulties that are there. So once again, we have some understanding as far as why Jesus was so well received by people. He was willing to talk to these people. He was willing to work with these people. He was willing to help these people. And in our world, do you think the same is still true today? When we find somebody who has a disability, you think that person is instantly tuned out by a certain percentage of our society? You know? Well, you're sick, I'm not. So you just go find some of the sick people and they can be your friends. And, you know, there's some things that are not items that we would probably look at under other circumstances had we had the choice. I mean, you're looking at the guy, you know, I'm not bothered by it, but at the same time, it's not a sight that I particularly like to see, a guy who's lost his leg. And he's got a mechanical device down there in place of his leg. You know, we're not typically accustomed to seeing that kind of thing. So, you know, unless we're just a gawker, you know, it's something that we just, like I say, sometimes people are just not the most comfortable with that. And I really wouldn't put myself in that category. But once again, a lot of people, I think they see that kind of thing where a fella is missing a finger and it's kind of like, well, you know, well, this guy's short a finger. What am I going to say to him? Well, is he really any different than the other guy who has 10 fingers and 10 toes? No. I mean, he's still a human being, still made in the image of God, and still has a lot of the issues that everybody else has. So when we look at Jesus, he did not fault people and avoid people because they were a little different from him. In fact, it seems like he actually sought those people out. And when he did that, the common people heard him gladly. And that's a great lesson. That's an important lesson for us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, somebody once talked about pretty people in the world. And if you look at the people who are would fall into the classification of pretty people, oftentimes they're probably going to get a little further with folks than the folks who are common or the folks who are not pretty.
She says, I'm the same person.
Sure. Right. But the world is very good at looking at a person, and when it doesn't, right, and when that exterior doesn't match up to what they think needs to be there, then, okay, we're going to go on and find somebody else. Sure. Or involved with drugs, involved with alcohol. Maybe they've been locked up. Maybe they have an infectious disease. Now, I'll tell you, if you get an infectious disease, I'm probably going to come in a mask and gown. I'll come see you. But, you know, I'm probably going to take a couple precautions there. So there are some things like that where we do need, you know, medical staff obviously will, you know, sometimes have to do those things, and the visitors will as well. But, you know, nobody's so contaminated. And I think the classic example of that, remember, wasn't it Dahmer? Remember the church sent him a Bible correspondence course? He became a Christian before he was put to death. So it's really easy for us to go ahead and dismiss people, but we've got to remember John 3:16, for God so loved the pretty people. No, for God so loved the world. Well, if we're God's people, who do we love? Yeah, but it's tempting to love just the pretty people. You know, the people who are just like us, and that's really a problem. And that can, you know, hinder things like growth and some other items. Anybody else before? Scott?
I know, with my advice that I wear, I've walked into a restaurant, and there'll be people that are in the middle of a conversation and just stop.
Well, that could...
I went to the courthouse, and there was an elder gentleman sitting with his son. He asked his son about the terrorists.
Oh.
I mean, I turned around to say something. The guy was like 90. There's nothing you can say.
Yeah. Say. Well, sometimes, you know, with an oxygen tank, Bob probably could go through the same kind of thing there with, you know, you're carrying around a bottle and people kind of wonder, you know, what's inside. But with the oxygen tube and some other things, they should be able to draw appropriate conclusions. But another good example of sometimes how people just are way off base. Tracy. Yeah. But there again, you see that mentality where it's, you know, you're different than I am. And there are situations where we're going to use the word impairment here. Someone has some kind of impairment. And it's, in my mind, right to ask and just say, look, there may be a task that you find to be difficult. Maybe not. I don't know. But you tell me if there's, you know, something that you need or some way I can help with. But I don't plan on treating you any differently. But like I say, if there's and that help should be offered to anybody. You know, if you need some assistance, let me know. But sure, and that's the right way to treat people. Yeah. Yeah. But our world is very good. If you look at our world, it's very, very good at segmenting people. You know, they always talk about race. Well, we've got, you know, this race and that race. If the media would drop all the references to race, I think people, by and large, would forget about it. But they just, you know, keep pushing that particular button. And we've got the poor, and we've got the disabled, and we've got this group, and we've got that group. Well, why try to fracture people like that? But from the Christian perspective, that's wrong. We don't want to fracture people into those various groups. You remember John 17? Jesus says that they all may be one. Amy?
I think that, you know, human nature is like a snowball. If
sure.
One or two people are very... know, it's very easy to jump on board one way or the other, whether it's against a group or it's for a group, to champion them and lift them up. Because, you know, you will see situations like that little girl's where her parents obviously have taught her, you know, you are an angel, you try, don't give up just because of how you were, you know, made. You were made perfect, just the way that you are. And so, you know, it's, I think that that's also an obligation for us as Christians to be that positive snowball and, you know, and set the tone of a situation and try to seek out opportunities to, you know, to let people, you know, kind of be that positive voice, because people will join in. And, you know, and same thing when you're going to a congregation and you let people know, hey, this, I attend here, and, you know, whatever. People attract. You drive by a restaurant, you see a bunch of cars, hey, that place must be really great, I'm going to go try that sometime. You know, it's a mentality. I mean, humans are magnets, and you're drawn to different things.
Yeah, the snowball effect may not be good psychological terminology, but it is true. You are in a group, and a few people start to clap, and pretty soon what happens? Everybody's clapping. You know, few people stand up, everybody stands up. You are at a race, and they start doing the wave. Well, everybody gets involved in the wave. So you're right as far as that particular aspect of humanity. And we need to go ahead and head people in the right direction instead of the world's direction. But sometimes that's very, very difficult. All right, let's get our next readers lined up. James 4. We'll read verses 1 to 4 and probably also have you look at verse 5 for us. All right, Scott. And after that, we'll look at Luke chapter 6, verse 20. Luke 6, verse 20. All right, Glenda and Tina, if you want to pick up our next passage, that will come from 2 Corinthians 8, verses 1 through 4. Let's start with James 4, 1 to 4. Mm-hmm.
What causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? It is not this, that your passions are at war within you. You desire and do not have, so you murder. You covet and do not obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and you do not receive because you ask wrong and spend it on your passions. You are adulterous people. You do not know the friendship
Is that James 4?
James 2.
It should have been James 2. I circled that and I crossed it out, and it looked like a 2 as far as what I crossed out. So I thought, that sounds like James 4. So let me back you up 2 chapters, my mistake. James 2, 1 to 4. Okay, now this offers a good illustration of the snowball effect that Amy was talking about. If you have a congregation that is reasonably friendly, you know, people are in the habit of, you know, for the most part, let's say 60-65% of the group goes up and, you know, greets new people and that kind of thing, you know, you think you're probably going to do pretty well as far as a group visiting folks? Probably so, because you've already got close to 2/3 of the group doing it. So here's the person who's a little shy, and, you know, eventually he kind of thinks, what? Well, majority did that, so, okay, I'll give it a try as well. But if you have a congregation where folks are not so friendly, unless you are just really extroverted, what do you think is going to happen to you? Probably just going to sit back there in the shadows unless things begin to change, because people, you know, we talked about in a recent Sunday night lesson, Christians are like sheep. People are like sheep, and they will follow the leader. So if it's an unfriendly group, people will still kind of follow that mold and stay with that trend, and vice versa. When we think about here, you have some folks coming in, and you've got some people falling over backwards, as the author says, to please the wealthy. They would have preferred a man with a... What? All right, but before we get to that, what kind of ring? A gold ring. And goodly, as Scott said, goodly apparel or goodly clothing. So, once again, can you imagine? Fella shows up. They can see folks rushing towards him. So again, people being people, you've probably got some folks. They may not have been the most extroverted folks in the world, but hey, everybody's going up to see him. I'm going to greet him too. And then we turn to the flip side of it. He talks about, James says, hath not God chosen the poor of the world, the rich in faith, and heirs of the kingdom? That's going to be the information from verse 5. And in the case of the poor, what happened to him? James says. Rather than be invited to get the good place? All right, you sit back there. Well, if that's the general prevailing spirit of the folks, do you think that it would be likely that somebody in the congregation would buck that trend? Probably not, or probably not too many. It would be, well, okay, maybe that's not my view, but that's what's been done to that guy, so okay. I'm just going to kind of sit here and let that happen. So the principle that we've introduced, the principle that we're talking about, very, very important, and it's essential that God's people head in the right way. Anything that you want to add or ask off that particular point? Okay, Luke 6, verse 20.
He then lifted his eyes towards his disciples and said, blessed are you poor, for yours is the kingdom of God.
Okay. Here I'm not sure that we're necessarily talking about physical poverty. I think it's more a reference to spiritual poverty. But once again, these people, they have their hearts in the right place. If that could be applied to physical poverty, I think we can make this additional point. If God says to the people who are downtrodden, the people who are desperate, you know, with your hearts, you know, we in heaven look favorably upon that. What if we don't look favorably upon those folks? We despise a group of people that God has special care for. So once again, I want to be very, very sensitive to trying to treat all people well. Anything that you want to add or ask before we pick up with 2 Corinthians 8? All right. Tina, is that you? 2 Corinthians 8, 1 to 4? Okay. Okay, let's fill in our blank. He talks about they were enduring a great flight of, what word would you put there? Affliction, persecution, difficulty. Now, you don't have to be poor to have difficulty, but I'll tell you something that you should know or may know, and if you don't, it's worth knowing. When we've door knocked in this area, and as you look at other areas throughout the world, especially in the United States, if you're going into an area that is wealthy, and you can tell it typically by the houses and the cars and you know, some other things, sometimes the landscaping and so forth. You think those folks are generally interested in God and the Bible or not? The rich folks? Generally not. If you're going to, if you're out just doing some door knocking and saying, hey, would you be willing to say to the Bible, where are you probably going to get the greatest response? You're going to get it among the poor. How come? A couple of reasons. All right, they need hope, and I think that's probably the primary reason. You have some people, they have all the, you know, difficulties typically that other folks have who are at the other end of the economic scale, but the rich guy, he's probably not thinking where today's meal is going to come from or where tomorrow's meal is going to come from or maybe where, you know, the rent's going to be paid or how the rent's going to be paid. But the poor, he just feels like there's affliction on every side. He's looking for hope. He's looking for something that's going to offer him some comfort in life and spiritual things. So when we think about these people, notice once again how Paul describes them. They were poor, and yet he says, what about their spiritual maturity? They were rich. They focused on God and spiritual things. So poverty is not necessarily the only way to get close to God, but it is one of the things that has helped many, many people. And you can find people sometimes who will tell you that their poorest years were some of their best years. Now, that seems to be contradictory, but it's happened for a lot of people. Anything that you want to touch base on before we look at the next section? Okay, he talks about some things are better than wealth. A lot of people say, well, that can't be true. He must have, you know, had a misprint here, but it's true. Let's pick up with James 1, verse 11, and then we'll look at Proverbs 22, verse 1, and also verse 5, and then we'll look at Proverbs 15, 16. Who'd like to be our James 1 reader? James 1, verse 11. All right, Lois, we'll go ahead, Scott, and direct you to the reference on the next page, page 48, Proverbs 22, verse 1. And then after we talk about that, Proverbs 22, 5, okay? 22, 1 and 22, 5. And then Proverbs 15, 16. Proverbs 15? All right, Jenny, verse 16. Let's take James 1:11.
For the sun rises with a scorching wind and withers the grass, and its flower falls off, and the beauty of its appearance is destroyed. So too, the rich man in the midst of his pursuits will fade away.
Okay, what happens to the rich? All right, that going to be true for Donald Trump? Yeah? Going to be true for Warren Buffett? For him, it looks like the day is getting a little closer. But whether we've got several years ahead of us, who would think, or maybe it looks like we're towards the end of the age that God has given us, we're going to fade away. What about the poor? Is he going to fade away too? Is he going to die? All right. Hebrews 9:27 says it's appointed unto man once to die. So each person is going to die. But it wasn't so much here, the emphasis in James 1:11, that people are going to die. What's the emphasis? Why say the rich man's going to fade away?
Because, once you're passed on, your
rich is really... It's gone. You know, it's going to be left to somebody else. The government may get it. It may be a relative that takes it. It may go to charity. Some people have left it to an animal, to the dog or cat, whatever it is. Somebody else is going to get it. So whatever we can accumulate, you have a few people that will live to over 100 years of age, but generally, whatever our age, we're probably not going to live much past 100. And when you sit down and look at that in the grand scheme of things, that is not that long. So whatever wealth we have, and that's where a lot of people really make the mistake. You know, they think we're going to build wealth, we're going to get, we're going to gain, we're going to accumulate a lot. Well, they get it. They spent their life. And then what happens to it? It's turned over to somebody else. Yeah, sometimes they don't know what they're going to do with it. And if that is our life's pursuit, we all have to make a living, and it's good to plan for now and for the expenses that we're going to have in the future, but if life is all about making money, in the end, our life was wasted. Complete failure. All right, let's see what we have in Proverbs 22. Scott, verse 1.
Good name is to be chosen rather than great riches. And favor is better than silver or gold.
All right. We say the book of Proverbs is a book of wise sayings, and this is one of those things. A what? A good name. Well, can you have a bad name? Yeah. We don't see too many parents saying to the daughter, let's name you Jezebel. That just, even if they don't know much about the Bible, they just think that's probably a poor choice. We want to stay away from that. How would a person come up with a good name? Sure. I mean, it's not, well, let's see, is it Sam, Joe, or Sue? It doesn't mean good in that particular sense, but it means a good reputation. And how do we do that? How do we get a good reputation, a good name?
How you live.
All right. It's based on how we live, how we interact with people. And in the case of the Christian, people may not like him or her, but we've tried to do what God has told us to do. And a person says, well, may not agree with that way of life, but at least they're trying to serve the God that they profess to believe in. Then the latter part of the question is rather to be chosen than great riches and what? Loving favor than silver and gold. He mentions then some information in Luke 16. This fellow, we don't know if he inherited his wealth, if he worked for some time and received his wealth that way. We're just not given any circumstances about that. But we do know, as we mentioned before, he's very wealthy. He's able to wear a color that was expensive in that day and time. Just, they got purple one drop at a time from a little fish. So you can imagine they didn't have the kind of scuba equipment that we have today. So if you're getting, one drop of purple from a fish and you're going to wear purple clothing, just extremely costly. He fares very well every day. But in the end, what happens to him and his wealth? He dies, he fades away, just as we heard from James 1, verse 11. And that truth is still with us today. So he enters into eternity. Death does not cause man to go out of existence. And he was reminded in these terms, son, remember that thou in thy lifetime, you received the good things. You had the best clothing. You had the best food. Where you lived would have been a very nice place. And there was this other fellow, Lazarus. He was a poor man. Lived at, or at least maybe didn't live there, but spent some time at the rich man's gates, and he also entered into his eternal state. He made some different choices, even though he was not financially well off. He lived a life that was pleasing to God, and in the afterlife, the rich man who died in a wrong relationship with God, he died in a state of suffering, And this man was told, hey, this fellow that laid at your gate, and you didn't care for him, now he's in a state where he is comforted. You know, those difficulties that he had in life, they have been removed. He's been relieved of those issues. And you are tormented. Now, when we think about Lazarus, people sometimes will say, I'm poor. This has always kind of amazed me because a person says, well, you know, today I'm poor. I'm poor. Ring, ring, ring. They got the cell phone. You know, that's always puzzled me a little bit. You know, maybe poor by the standard that we've set up as far as poverty, maybe below the, you know, threshold that the government uses. And then they say, well, you know, I got to, you know, light up a cigarette. And then you have some other things going on. You know, I got to, you know, get my car fixed. Well, okay. I mean, that can be a problem for you, but at least you've got enough money for a car. So when you think about poor, our definition of poor doesn't always match up real well with what we find as far as poverty in the Bible. I mean, when we talk about people today who are so poor, we don't think of somebody wanting to go and gather the droppings in the farmer's field, do we? That's not our definition of poor. But in Bible times, there were some people who were this poor. And in the case of Lazarus, what did he want for his food? He desired the crumbs. Now, you know, it's almost like a dog, isn't it? Anybody ever have a dog in the house? You know, it'll just sit there and it'll beg, it'll take crumbs. You know, just a couple cookie crumbs. And boy, I mean, it's like, hey, that was something good. It's hard for us to imagine that anybody, food-wise, I mean, we'd be insulted if somebody threw a few crumbs on our plate. Are you kidding me? You know, that's a joke. But this fellow was so hungry, so desperate, this is how he is described. And yet you have the rich man, once again, plenty of resources to take care of himself. He could have surely taken care of many poor people, but in the case of Lazarus, he did absolutely nothing. Thoughts on what we've gone over so far? Okay, let's look at Proverbs 15:16. Okay, let's fill in our blanks. Better is little, we may not have a lot, and such was also true for Lazarus in that story, Luke 16, but we can have that with the fear of the Lord, and then, of course, be blessed. He adds so many times, wealth is more trouble than it's worth besides the greed it causes in its possessor. A scripture similar to Proverbs 15:16 is Psalm 37, verse 16. It says the little, the small amount that a righteous man has is better than the riches of many wicked. So we, as we began this lesson, talked about balance. Do you remember what we said about balance last week when it comes to wealth? David, a long time ago, he really hit it on the head. He said, don't leave me with so little that I'm tempted to steal. And God, at the same time, don't give me so much that I forget you. So, you know, David was sort of thinking in terms of a middle class. Way back when. He didn't use that terminology, but, you know, put me in the middle there where I can go ahead and get through, you know, my days, and I've got enough to make ends meet, but at the same time, not so much. But when we look at our world, especially American society, where do we find most people on that scale? Yeah. They want as much as they can possibly get. We're not content with the middle. It's just more, and let's accumulate as much as we possibly can. But the ultimate question is why? What are we going to do with it? There has to be a good purpose. Let's see. Number three, he says, hope of a home in heaven is much better than all the riches that this life can afford. The rich man had to leave his sumptuous living and finery, but Lazarus, when he died, was carried by the angels into Abraham's bosom where he was comforted. If the heaping up of riches is one's main objective in life, he's missed the whole purpose of living. And that's exactly right. But for our world, many, that is what they're thinking about. It's, you know, we just want to go up and up and up and be in the top, you know, 10%, 5%, 1%, whatever that is. But then he rightly says, for these things can never soothe a troubled heart or give comfort to a departing spirit. If our goal is money, can we ever get enough or satisfied? No. I mean, it is a hole that you just can't fill. I'm a little amazed at Buffett. I mean, maybe he works to keep active and nobody would fault him for that. But, you know, after you end up with so many billion, I mean, you know, what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with it? Now, he's, I think, done a lot with philanthropy and whatnot, and that's certainly a good thing. But still, need to make sure that we've got the right outlook on life. Before we pick up with the next section, anything that you want to add or ask?
Well,
Okay, got about 3 minutes, and probably not going to... Well, let's see if we can finish out the blanks in this lesson. We'll do it this way. Psalm 49, verses 6 and 7, we read, they that trust in their wealth, and they boast. Now think about that. Here's a person who not only trusts in his wealth, but he trusts it how fully? Boasts. He's willing to brag about it. Boast themselves in the multitude of the riches. None of them can by any means redeem his brother, nor give to God a ransom for him. That seems to mean that money can do a lot of things, but you cannot buy a person back who's died. You can't keep a person from death. Money is just not going to help you. You can't give enough to God and say, well, I want to avoid death, and you know, here's $10 million. And God says, well, okay. Number two, money cannot go with us beyond the grave. Paul said this in 1 Timothy 6, verse 7. We brought how much? We brought nothing into this world. And it is certain. We are absolutely positive that we're not going to carry anything out. We can put rings on the body. You know, we can do all kinds of things as far as, you know, dress somebody in the best suit. But the body stays behind. The eternal spirit goes to that place where Lazarus and the rich men are. Number three, riches, money, it cannot bring true satisfaction. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 10, we read, he that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with it, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This also is vanity. Once again, it's describing that hole. You can get, you can gain, you can accumulate, but it is not going to satisfy in the end. Neither can it give you security. Point four, as we see from these passages. Proverbs 11, verse 28, he that trusts in his riches shall fall. Not necessarily if you have riches you're going to fall, but if you trust in them, you're going to fall. In this life, probably. It's a general statement, but certainly in eternity. Proverbs 23, 5, will thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away. And how fast can they go? Just like that. Proverbs 27, 23 and 24, be thou diligent to know the state of thy flocks, and look well to thy herds. For riches are not forever, and doth the crown endure to every generation. The point here seems to be when you, and we see good examples of this today, there is somebody who builds a great business and passes it on to the next generation. And the next generation may do reasonably well. But after a couple more generations, in many cases, probably more cases than not, what happens to that business? Yeah, it goes kaput. Because people, you know, three or four generations down the line, oftentimes they didn't put in the blood, sweat, and tears, and it's, you know, well, okay, it's just going to perpetuate itself on its own. And, you know, it just often doesn't work that way. He says in this lesson, we've looked at the rich, the poor, both can go to heaven, and that's the point. We do not have to be rich to go to heaven. We do not have to be poor to go to heaven. The rich can go if they do not trust in their riches, if they're not willing to boast about it, as we talked about before. They're ready to distribute to those in need. Many will not meet these conditions, however, and will be lost. The poor can also go to heaven, but they must not let their poverty cause them to be envious and resentful toward the rich. Now, we have that in our society. We have people who say, well, you know, it's all those evil rich people. Well, they may not be evil. You know, money does not make a person evil, just as poverty does not make a person evil or bad. What they do with their lives is going to determine what kind of person they are. They must not let their poverty drive them to steal or engage in acts of violence to obtain the things they want. If they stay on the Lord's side, they can one day enjoy the many mansions that Jesus has gone to prepare. All right, lesson 9 is where we pick up next week.